I mean, I have to represent the everyman, right? Like the common person listening to this. Not that our listeners are common, but they can't all be Brandons and Thomases.
Hi, and welcome to Episode Center Nation. My name is Brandon Sparks.
I'm Ben Gertz.
I'm Thomas Horton.
And with each new episode of Cine Nation, we break down a subgenre of film, talk about its history, its tropes, and some of our favorite films in that genre. And then at the end of it, we pitch our very own Ben Gertz. Go ahead.
Hi, everybody.
Our very own audience of what movies we think you should watch that's based off this genre and kind of based off our discussions of it as well. So, yeah, I guess, Ben, what have you watched anything lately that we've told you to watch?
No, I'm very disobedient. I just, as far as cinematic accomplishments, I just finished Chernobyl.
Okay.
That's about all I can lay claim
Ben,
to.
That's, so. I can't even claim that right now. I'm still working on
wow.
it.
So. I haven't even started yet. So,
Whoa, guys. Whoa. We're going to have to do another episode where I pitch you guys shows and it's going to be Chernobyl.
Okay. Well, I've already started it. So I don't think that'll work, but,
okay.
What's my other option though?
Euphoria.
You mean for things to watch?
Euphoria. Okay. Yeah, well, because like we're pitching you.
I don't think Euphoria is going to be up your alley, Brandon. I'm just saying, just throwing that out there.
You don't know that, Thomas.
I know how you felt about Assassination Nation.
I was mixed. There was stuff I really enjoyed and stuff I wasn't.
And I think all the stuff you enjoyed about Assassination Nation is not in Euphoria, and all the stuff you didn't like about Assassination Nation is in Euphoria.
I won't go in depth on what I didn't like. So, Ben, you haven't watched any recommendation. Have you? Has anyone given you any other recommendations outside of us that you've watched? That's not Chernobyl.
No.
Okay. Cool.
I mean, I'm not sure how to beg for mercy here. I bought some of the merch. I mean, maybe that'll.
Oh yeah, we have merch.
Plug the merch.
We have merch now. We have merch now.
We got merch. I got some.
It's you can look at it on our Facebook and Instagram and all that good stuff. But you know, it's at tpublic.com. If you go to their website and search Cine Nation, it'll pop up. We have t-shirts, hoodies, coffee mugs, stickers, notebooks.
Coming soon.
Yeah, follow us on social media. And we're going to be talking about this a lot.
Yeah,
we're hyped.
Coming soon. Some of your favorite Cine Nation quotes on t-shirts,
which we don't know yet.
Ask me about my favorite subgenre of film. That's my
that's gonna be our question.
That'll really bring the people in.
Yeah.
Anyway, Thomas, have you watched anything off anyone's recommendation of late?
Okay, well, this was so a show was recommended to me by a friend from college called Love Island.
Okay.
It's a British reality series where they put a bunch of good-looking young people in a house together, and every week you have to be in a couple, and whoever's not in a couple is kicked out of the house at the end of the week, and it airs in England every night of the week for 3 months straight.
Oh my god!
During the summer.
What?
During the summer, that's all you do in England is go home and watch Love Island. It's been running for like 10 years. Every summer, and so there's like 60 episodes per season.
This is horrifying.
So it's it's wild. It's really interesting. But I watched the first season that is on Hulu of that, which I think is like the 2015 season. And then this week I've been trying out the CBS just launched an American version of it. So I've been trying it out, and I think the appeal of it. I think the appeal of it was in all the different British accents and British slang I was learning on the show, because the American version's just not doing anything for me whatsoever. But you know, the British version, you get to watch a Scottish Playboy bunny who you literally cannot even understand any words. Like I have to watch it with the subtitles on because I cannot understand a word that she says, and that's I think where the novelty of it came from. And I'm quickly souring on the American version, but
and it's airing every night I think by the time this podcast
so
is released.
CBS does it 5 nights a week, But in England, they do it 5 nights a week, and then Saturday night they air like a recap episode of the week. Jesus. So if you don't watch it every night, you can just watch the Saturday episode, and then Sunday they do like the live elimination ceremony.
This will date us, because I feel like by the time this is done, it'll be off the air.
That's what's crazy is it's not performing well.
Yeah,
the American version is not performing well, and it's shot like live. So the question is, do you pull the plug on it? And like,
wait, it's shot live?
Yeah, it's shot like a day ahead of time, but the episode you're watching is the previous day. The results are announced live in like a special live episode. But the question is, like, if it's not performing well, do you pull the plug on it and like strand all these kids in Fiji?
Could be worse things. Working on that sounds awful.
Oh, the editing is ridiculous. There's got to be so much footage. Every day you got to take everything that happened that day from thousands of cameras. I mean, it's just it's like Big Brother's, this house rigged up with cameras. Well, every day you've got to just cut it down into, you know, an hour episode.
Like a nightmare.
And see, think, because I was just an editor on like one show, kind of like, well, not like that, but it was a reality show. And just thinking about the amount of footage we had for like that, and that was like a, gosh, not even like a full like hour long, because this is an hour long show, or is this a
it's an hour long, yeah.
Yeah, like we were doing like our that's show crazy. Was like 15 minutes on the online, and we would have like so many computers running trying to dump footage, and it would take almost a day just to dump footage and get prepared for the editors.
Well, this one's in Fiji, so I bet they had to, you know, up the entire internet infrastructure of the island just to be able to make this show work.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Well, anyway, enough about Love Island.
That has been consuming all of my watching abilities for the past like month. That and Stranger Things.
Well, let's move on to movies, I guess, is a better way of doing it. So yeah, the genre we're going to talk about today is kind of a genre that is, I don't know, maybe one you don't think of as much as some of the ones we've talked about, but it's a very popular genre, and it's been popular for decades, actually more so than, or even before film was invented, the genre was very popular. And we're talking about the road movie today. And road movies have become very, and we'll delve into this as the show goes on, but have been very important within American culture, or film culture, basically. It's very like, it's a big component of American film. When you think of kind of road movies, there's other versions elsewhere in different countries around the world, but it feels very American.
There's obviously some copyright issues going on, but in your head right now, just play Born to Be Wild by Steppenwolf just in your head, and just imagine that underlying this episode.
Exactly. That's another thing we'll talk about. Like, there's music is involved in a lot of these road movies. But we're going to start off with a little clip from Wim Wenders, who's a German filmmaker. I hope I pronounced his name right. I don't usually. I think so. With German, it's like the W is not a W. It's a, like, yeah, it's a V. Yeah. But Wim Wenders is kind of like known to be one of the most popular directors within this road movie genre. A lot of his earlier films were road movies, and they've been kind of, they're more like introspective and very indie when they started off as. He's done movies like Paris, Texas, Alice in the Cities, Kings of the Road, a number of different films. But yeah, so in this clip, he's going to talk a little bit about like road movies and why, very short, why they work for him.
It was also the first road movie that I shot. That little film, Alice in the Cities, was a way for me to discover that there was a genre where I could feel like a fish in the water, and it was very liberating to shoot with such a little crew and direct sound and on the road traveling and stopping wherever I saw something that I liked and then we invent a scene there.
So yeah, he's kind of breaking down why road movies were so interesting for him and the experience of it. And before that, he kind of talked about how he wanted to go down to Florida and shoot this movie, but they didn't have the money, so they just kind of went as far south as possible until they saw their first palm tree, which ended up being in North Carolina, and they just, that's where the film was taking place at, and it was set that way.
Well, and I think, you know, he's kind of talking about how the road movie was something kind of easier to access as an indie production. And that makes a lot of sense when you look at that time period and how many influential directors kind of got their start doing road movies. Because you've got, I mean, you've got, we'll talk about it.
I mean, it's sort of a way to embrace like artificial constraints, right? Like you're putting a constraint on yourself of like, we have to, it's like an improv movie in a way. Like we're going to find scenes. I mean, I remember an interview with David Gordon Green years ago where he was talking about location scouting for Undertow, I think, and how they basically just loaded up in a car and just drove the East Coast, like looking for... I mean, it's not a road movie, but just that like search for inspiration, basically, and also a sort of like a artistic interest in like simplifying and finding your roots and, you know, whatever. I think that's appealing to a lot of creative
people.
Yeah,
and if you're an independent, you know, up and coming director, it's you know, you don't have to commit to a location. You can just hop in the car and move on to something else, which I know is how Easy Rider was kind of shot. And you know, then you've got... you got someone like Terrence Malick coming in with Badlands around the same time, even Spielberg kind of hopping in on road movies all that same period. And I think it was a really interesting genre for people to cut their teeth on.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up Easy Rider, because Easy Rider was actually, I mean, at the time we're listening to this podcast, it was a few weeks ago. It's the 50th anniversary this year, and it was released in the summer of 1969. And there was an interesting article talking about on IndieWire celebrating the 50th year and how Easy Rider changed the industry and kind of what movies Hollywood looked at to be produced. It's like it was kind of Bonnie and Clyde in 67, and then it becomes Easy Rider in 69, and that's what really kind of pushes it forward. And if you're looking, I mean, if you guys look at our letterbox, you'll kind of see it goes, there's kind of big gaps in between each film before Bonnie and Clyde and Easy Rider. And then it's just like, bam, 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 bam. Like there's a movie every year almost post Easy Rider. In some cases, multiple films a year dealing with like the road movie genre in some way. If it's like Two-Lane Blacktop or even Duel or Paper Moon, Badlands, which Thomas mentioned, it became a very big genre within the 70s. And in the IndieWire article it talked about, which was a very interesting thing, it said how Hollywood industry, it takes about 18 months to catch up with what's happened from like from development, production, post-production. It takes about 18 months. And if you look at it, it's like from Easy Rider to The Vanishing Point, which was the next, or possibly the next road movie, because we might miss some of these in this letterbox, it was like a 20-month period. So it really took about that long before studios kind of caught up and started making movies like this. I know Ben saw Two-Lane Blacktop. Ben, do you have any comments about Two-Lane Blacktop?
I had to refresh my memory just a little bit, because I saw this in LA like 13 years ago, I think at AFI. I think it was like a... Mm-hmm. I know that the director did like a Q&A afterwards. Monty Hellman, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's his most popular, well-regarded film. I was reading back through, like there's a New York Times critics pick video that I was watching on YouTube. We'll put in the show notes, but it's basically this like love letter to the open road and the American car. Like it's this the tone of it is very strange. It's very strange. That is my primary memory, because the ending is, I remember, you know, again, this is like college. I hadn't seen everything. I still haven't, you know, but like the ending is iconic because they're like in the middle of a race, or it's like the end of the race.
Yeah.
I was trying to find the clip of it, but the basically it looks like the projector film is burning, like the film basically burns away at the end and you have the sound continue.
I think the A.O. Scott video you're talking about ends with that.
I was watching it before the prepping here, but I remember being kind of upset at you know, because it's like it's just a scattered film. Like I think the performances are in line with just sort of like it's basically like a mumblecore sort of thing, right? I mean, they're just wandering
James
around.
James Taylor is the lead, right?
Yeah. James Taylor's lead. It's interesting, and it is emblematic of this genre of just like it seems very very American, you know. Yeah. What I mean, like,
and it was James Taylor's only movie where he was like the leading role. Dennis Wilson, who's from the Beach Boys, it's like, and all their names are like, so James Taylor, his character name is the driver. Mm-hmm. Dennis Wilson, who's like his kind of like buddy who drives with him, is the mechanic. That's their title name. The girl who's with them, Lori Bird, her name is the girl. The antagonist of the film is Warren Oates, and his name is GTO because he drives a GTO. Because I think the whole thing about this film is like, it's essentially the three people, Wilson, Bird, and Taylor, are all together, and they cross paths with Warren Oates, who plays GTO, and it's basically like they decide to have almost like a cross-country contest. Mm-hmm. Where they're going to go from California to Memphis and see who can go there first. But it's just kind of this like weird existential like type movie. It's introspective in a way, because you kind of have weird conversations throughout. It's very much this kind of counterculture type film.
Yeah.
And it's I'm reading on kind of like the Wikipedia thing. It was saying how it's notable because it's kind of a time capsule of Route 66, because it's like kind of the pre-highway era. And so kind of this like freedom type aspect to it all. But it's interesting with Tulane Blacktop, because there was a story I heard when like watching the Criterion version of it. They had some special features, but talked about how post like Easy Rider and all those movies, studios didn't know what to do. And so Universal, which released Tulane Blacktop, they had like some sort of like indie initiative or something where they picked five movies, gave them each $1 million, and then gave the directors complete freedom to do whatever they wanted to. And all five of those movies failed miserably at the box office, is what it was. And so it's like, and it's like Universal was always late to the game on this indie or this kind of new movement. And when they did it, it failed miserably. Because they had a whole like specific, I think, like company within Universal, and just like it got like with Tulane Blacktop, it got great reviews. People loved it. I think at one point, even before the film came out, someone did this huge article talking about how it was the best film of the year, and it hadn't even came out in theaters yet. And then just like people just revolted about it.
It's tonally strange. Like for me, like thinking about like time capsules and the time period, like I'm personally much more interested in Badlands, which is 2 years later from Malick, his debut. Like the tone of Badlands is sort of similar in that it's like it's sort of brooding and quiet and slow.
Yeah.
But Badlands feels like a masterpiece, and Tulane Blacktop is sort of like scattered and fractured, and I don't know. I know that people point to it as a masterpiece, but to me,
an interesting movie, especially, you know, not, you know, how many years, 5 years after Bonnie and Clyde, because it's a very, very similar film, but just what if we took an On the Run film and just did it completely different? Because Bonnie and Clyde is like Foggy Mountain Breakdown, hectic, like 100 miles an hour, and Badlands is just quiet and calm, and I think I saw someone wrote on Letterboxd like this is the most peaceful movie about murdering people I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah,
that's a great review.
It's interesting within that five year window, just how much is happening within that genre.
Yeah, and it does feel like with that Universal initiative you're talking about, it does feel like a lot of people are trying to capture what Easy Rider did, because not only within this genre, but within the idea of independent film in general, Easy Rider was such a revolutionary concept. And it really, really changed, I think, the way that film was going in that time period. But yeah, it's wild when we look at, you know, if you take our Letterboxd list and put it in chronological order, it's a kind of a slow trickle of movies until you get to Bonnie and Clyde, followed up by Easy Rider, and then it's just the 70s are just boom.
Every year from 71 to 79, there's like on average at least one to two movies a year. And from different people. So you have like Paper Moon with Peter Bogdanovich. Spielberg actually has two movies in this category with Duel and Sugarland Express. Then you get, Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore by Scorsese. So you're getting, and then Badlands by Malick, you're getting kind of these, in some cases, early movies by these directors before they make it big. So we have this kind of era. And Thomas, you mentioned the On the Road movie. There's kind of two specific stories within this genre. And that's the On the Run movie and the Quest movie. And so with an On the Run movie, it's essentially like Badlands or Bonnie and Clyde, where it's usually an outlaw couple of some kind, and they're on the run from the law, and they could have been robbing banks or murdering people. And it's still actually, this is a genre that's still, I think, big today. I think coming out soon this year, there's a movie that's coming out. It's basically a Bonnie and Clyde, but it's Daniel Kaluuya from Get Out.
I saw the trailer for that.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, this looks really good. But it's actually a, let me see what the name of it's called. But it's like, oh, this is basically, it's Bonnie and Clyde, but for it's a modern audience. And again, we've talked about this before with some of these genres, is it's very usually white, predominantly white. And this is kind of one of the first one I've seen that deals with a black couple. But yeah, it's called Queen and Slim. And funny enough, it's being released by Universal Pictures.
There you go. They're still at it.
But yes, there's the On the Run movie and the Quest movie.
What would you consider if we're picking these apart? What would you consider Smokey and the Bandit?
See, I would see that.
Quest. They got to get that beer delivered. They're eastbound and down.
Yeah, and they're being chased.
Yeah, they got to do what they said can't be done.
And they're being chased by the sheriff, by the law. There's interesting. There's a few movies that fit into both genres. There was another one I was thinking about today where I was like, oh, they're kind of like they're both on the run and on a quest.
Well, they have those tropes or
yeah.
Those.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like sometimes they they definitely combine because sometimes you're on the run and there's a destination. Like, I mean, if you're looking at an on the run film in its like purest form, it's something like Bonnie and Clyde, where you know they, as soon as they hit the road, Bonnie and Clyde knew that they were going to die together. Like, you know, they're not like setting out for one last score before they retire or something. They're just on the road as long as they can.
Yeah. Well, even like Mad Max Fury Road kind of fits into both genres, where it's like, and this is a more modern take and kind of a very almost like blockbuster take of this, but it's basically. Furiosa, played by Charlize Theron, she's on the run from the villain of the movie. She's on the run from them. Max is along for the ride, and they're going to, I think, the Green Place is what they're trying to go to, and so they're being chased all the way there. And then the whole big plot change is they turn around and go back the other way.
Yeah.
But it's like that's both an on the run movie and a quest movie. They have a place they're going, and they're heading straight towards it. And in some cases, they're being chased. I think even Sugarland Express, which was Spielberg's first theatrical debut in the States, is basically this Bonnie and Clyde type duo. But they're not robbers. They're not really murderers. Basically, what it is, it's Goldie Hawn. And the actor whose name escapes me from Ben Johnson, who was also in Ghostbusters.
Was also in Last Picture Show.
Is Ben Johnson? Yeah. He is. Yeah.
He won an Oscar for Last Picture Show.
Did it? Well, okay. Well, my apologies. Not Ben Johnson. Ben Johnson's the sheriff who's chasing
him. Okay, well, Ben Johnson is also from The Last Picture Show.
It's. I'm sorry. I was looking at the Letterboxd thing, and it was the top. The main guy I'm thinking of was not top. It's not second build. It's William Atherton,
ooh,
who was in Ghostbusters and Die Hard. So basically, they're like she breaks him out of prison or of jail, and they go to find their kid who's in Texas. And basically, the entire time they have the destination they're going to, and they're being chased by the cops along the way. So to start off with kind of breaking down these two types of stories in this genre, we're going to show a clip from Thelma and Louise, which is an On the Run movie. Have you guys both seen Thelma and Louise? I know, Thomas, you
have. Absolutely.
Negative.
Ben. Oh, Ben.
I know. Look, there's huge travesties that have happened in my life, and this is one of them.
It's one of them. Thomas, can you give a brief overview of Thelma and Louise?
So Thelma and Louise are two friends who are on a road trip, and I can't keep their names straight, but it's Gina Davis and Susan Sarandon. I don't remember which one is which. But while stopping at a bar for a drink, one of them is assaulted by a man, and the other one shoots him. And so they go on the run. It is a pure on the run film. They have no destination. Mm-hmm. They are just getting away from the cops, and they become in the meantime, they become kind of like outlaw heroes in the news. The news starts picking them up, and people are kind of following them as they run for the cops. And it's just kind of taking that genre, that on the run genre that we're talking about, and placing it firmly in like a female perspective, because it addresses these ideas of, yes, this was self-defense, but you know, who would believe these two women out on the road that they killed a man in self-defense? And and Harvey Keitel plays the cop who's chasing him down, but also is like a lot of the cops are like trying to stop them, but he's very clearly like trying to get them help. But yeah, and it's one of those like classic buddy road movies, and directed by Ridley Scott, and is well remembered for a lot of iconic scenes, for the introduction of Brad Pitt into the film industry, and two awesome performances from the leads.
Yeah, so that's a good lead into this clip. So this clip, basically, Susan Sarandon is on the phone with Harvey Keitel, and basically they are trying to figure out where Thelma and Louise are. And Susan Sarandon is Louise.
Oh, okay, there we go.
And so, yeah, Gina Davis is Thelma. So basically, Gina Davis has left her, or Thelma has left her husband as well, and they're on the run for him. So basically, he's played by Christopher McDonald, and he's gotten the cops involved, and Louise will only talk to Harvey Keitel's character, Detective Slocum. So in this scene, this is kind of their first one of their early interactions together on the phone.
Hello, Louise.
Hey.
How are things going out there?
Weird. We got some kind of a snowball effect happening here or something.
You're still with us, though.
Mm-hmm.
You're somewhere on the face of the earth.
Well, we're not in the middle of nowhere, but we can see it from here.
I swear. Louise, I almost feel like I know you.
Well, you don't.
You're getting in deeper every moment you're gone.
Would you believe me if I told you this whole thing was an accident?
I do believe you. That's what I want everybody to believe. Trouble is, it doesn't look like an accident. And you're not here to tell me about it. I need your help here. Did Harlan Puckett...
I don't want to talk about it.
You want to come on in?
Don't think so.
Then I'm sorry. We're going to have to charge you with murder. Now, do you want to come out of this alive?
You know, certain words and phrases just keep drifting through my mind. Things like incarceration, cavity search, death by electrocution, life imprisonment, shit like that. You know what I'm saying? So do I want to come out alive? I don't know. I don't know. I think we're going to have to think about that.
Louise... I'll do anything. I know what's making you run. I know what happened to you in Texas.
Wow.
So Ben, what are your thoughts? Do you want to give us descriptions of what we saw in that that film for the listeners at home?
I'm the visual interpretation. I love the music. I love the music.
There's a lot of music in this film. A lot of music.
Such a throwback to a specific moment in like scoring.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? That's
very heavy synth scoring.
That's great. No, I don't feel like I have to interpret it too much for people. I mean, it really, visually, there's not too many crazy things happening. I mean, I would say that's a very standard kind of Hollywood expectation for that time period. Keitel's interesting in that, though. There's some kind of like soft focus from how, well, they're kind of like missing the focal mark a little bit because he's moving around and they've got it pretty tight as he's walking around the room.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
So, and the thing about these on the run movies, a big kind of part of them is that they don't always end up turn out well for the lead characters, or at least one of them. I mean, I feel like I'm not going to say it for Ben because I don't know if Ben knows it, but with the
ending, Ben, do you know how Thelma and Louise ends? You don't?
No, I didn't know that Brad Pitt was in it, so.
You really have never seen the end of Thelma and Louise? It's iconic.
No.
Okay. All right.
I feel like the ending is more iconic than the actual movie, if that makes any sense. Like the film, like it's been parodied so many different times.
Was it Wayne's World 1 or 2? It's 2, right?
2. Yeah. Wayne's World 2.
Haven't seen it.
I feel like that's the quote on the t-shirt.
Haven't seen it.
On the t-shirt. Haven't seen it. Ben Gertz.
I mean, I have to represent the everyman, right? Like the common person listening to this. Not that our listeners are common, but they can't all be Brandons and Thomases.
I know we've asked
for
listener interaction in the past, and we've been very happy with people sending us in their film recommendations and stuff. Please, please get in touch with us if you've never seen Thelma and Louise, but you know what the ending is. Please get in touch with us because I just want to know how many people there are. That I feel like I knew what the ending was before I saw the movie for the first time, for sure. I want to know if Ben's in the minority in this one or not.
I think less than 50% of people would be on my side of this fence. I love Ridley Scott too. That's the other thing. Love Ridley Scott. But here I am on the wrong side of history.
Yeah. But yeah, they usually don't turn out well, Ben. That's all I got to say about these on the run
movies.
I
mean, crime doesn't pay, Brandon.
That's true.
Exactly. So you have the on the run movie, and then you have the Quest movie. And so the Quest, essentially, you asked about Smoking the Vamp, but basically they are, they have a place in mind they're going to. They have a goal, a task they have to do. And we're basically following them on their way there. Sometimes they're more introspective and kind of these more indie dramas. Sometimes they're more comedic. There's a number of comedies within this genre. I know earlier on, it's like with the Bob Hope Bing Crosby movies that were like Road to Morocco, these kind of Road to movies, is that you're kind of just following their kind of adventure to these places. But the one we're going to show is one I posted on Facebook online about like what's everyone's favorite kind of road movies, what's some road movies that you think of when you think of the genre. And one of the biggest ones that was talked about the most was Dumb and Dumber, which I found kind of funny. But Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels. Ben, have you seen Dumb and Dumber?
Yes, I can. I can claim some cultural touchstones.
Can you break it down for us? What is Dumb and Dumber?
What is Dumb and Dumber? Oh my gosh. When did I last see Dumb and Dumber? Probably high school, Brandon. Probably high school. I mean, it's Jim Carrey at his one of his quirkier roles. I don't know. It's a road trip. What do you want here? You want the I don't know what their goal is. I don't know what their end goal.
They're going to Aspen. That's the whole thing. Is that it's what it is Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels, Harry and Lloyd decide to go on the road because Lauren Holly plays this woman named Mary. Okay, so Lloyd, I believe Lloyd is Jim Carrey. Lloyd is like a limo driver or whatever, and he is dropping off this beautiful woman, Mary, and she at the airport, and she sees that she drops her suitcase at the airport, and he's like, oh my god, I have to go get it. And he grabs the suitcase, he takes it back, and it's money inside. And what you find out is that she's kind of doing a deal where she's kind of paying off these criminals. And when he steals the money, these criminals, it's actually kind of on the run and
the Quest movie, it's a plan.
Is that they're being chased by these two criminals who are after the money. And they're trying to go to Aspen to find Mary to give her the suitcase. And because also Lloyd is in love with her after his one meeting with her in his limo. So in this scene, we're gonna hear Lloyd and Harry, played by Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels, kind of go through the moment of when they decide to actually go to Aspen and start this trip that could change their lives.
That's it. I've had it with this dump. We got no food. We got no jobs. Our pets' heads are falling off.
Okay, just calm down.
What the hell are we doing here, Harry? We gotta get out of this town.
Yeah, and go where? Where are we gonna go?
I'll tell you where. Someplace warm. A place where the beer flows like wine. Where beautiful women instinctively flock like the salmon of Capistrano. I'm talking about a little place called Aspen.
I don't know, Lloyd. The French are assholes. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. I know what you're up to, mister. Yeah, you just want to go to Aspen and find that girl who lost her briefcase, and you need me to drive you there, right? Am I right?
Yeah,
am I right? Am I right, Lloyd?
So? So I want to go someplace where we know somebody who can plug us into the social pipeline.
No, 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 Lloyd. No, I say we stay here, we hunt for jobs, and we keep saving our money for the worm store. I don't know about you, but I am getting sick and tired of running from creditors.
You know what I'm sick and tired of, Harry? I'm sick and tired of having to eke my way through life. Sick and tired of being a nobody. But most of all, I'm sick and tired of having nobody.
Okay, Lloyd. Aspen it is.
Wow. Jeff Daniels.
Wow. You can see why there's Oscar material in the future, you know?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it's playing for comedy there, but it's kind of taking these, like, almost road trip tropes and putting them in a comedic tone. It's like, I feel like in a lot of these dramatic ones, I have to go somewhere. I have to be like, I can't be here. I'm going out and seeking something, and they just turn it on its head and make it a comedy. What's, but it's still the same.
Exact and what's thing. The most important lesson of the Quest movie?
Oh, it's the journey.
The journey is more important than the destination, which is why if you look back at these movies, so often the destination like falls through too. I mean, Zombieland. You know, the place that they're headed to doesn't exist. Mad Max, the place they're going to, doesn't end up existing. Like, a lot of these, you just, they, I mean, everyone knows the journey is better. Little Miss Sunshine, I absolutely love the ending of that movie where they just all realize how dumb this beauty pageant they've spent the whole time going to. But, I mean, you know, everybody knows that the journey is better than the destination, but it's often really interesting when the destination just doesn't even exist or is just so disappointing. And I mean, there's sometimes both happen. Like sometimes the destination is great. And the journey was also great. Like a goofy movie. They make it to the Powerline concert and they get to go on stage. They get to go on stage and they eye to eye. They get to see eye to eye, which is an incredible song. But also they learn that, you know, family is more important than concert tickets. But they still get to go to the concert. Maybe that's just because that's a kid's movie.
But it's still all about the journey.
Even in that clip that we just watched, right? I mean, he's saying, like, I'm tired of being, of having nobody. But, I mean, the culmination of the whole thing, right, is that they have each other.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the
Cause,
the reoccurring theme of most of these.
Because, spoiler alert, with anyone who hasn't seen Dumb and Dumber, Mary ends up, like, that we find out is that the briefcase that she's been trying to, like, that she's been giving these criminals is because they've kidnapped her husband. Mm. And so the whole thing is to get the girl, and then in the end it's like, oh, he doesn't get the girl, but he has Harry. He has his best friend, the guy who's been with him through thick and thin the entire time.
Yeah, so it's fair, and well, and it boils down to the idea in screenwriting of like wants and needs, and it's very boring for a character to get what they want. It's more interesting for them to figure out what they need. And I think the like Quest road movie is one of the most literal ways to embody that that idea in screenwriting is, you know, someone is actually on the road going, physically moving towards their want, and usually the want's not going to work out. Gotta throw one out real quick too. One of the first movies I ever streamed on Netflix Instant, Sex Drive.
Wow.
Where the guy's going to meet a girl he met on a chat room and then finds out he got catfished, but that he was in love with his best friend all along.
Yeah.
You know, only ever watched that movie. Watched it several times because it was on Netflix Instant. And there weren't any other movies on Netflix Instant at that point. But gotta throw it out. James Marsden is hilarious in that movie.
He's actually great in that movie. But yeah, and it's a very easy structure. Even though a road movie kind of like doesn't really have to have structure. It's just kind of obstacles thrown in the way or kind of moments in the way or for the characters. But it's a very literal thing where like we're going from this place to this place. As a rider, you can just put stuff in between your start of the destination and the end of the destination, or the starting destination.
There can also literally just be no obstacles, like if you're making any of the trip movies, which I haven't seen The Trip to Spain yet, but The Trip and The Trip to Italy is literally just two comedians on the road together having conversations over dinner.
These road movies are more, they're not, plot isn't that important. It's more about having interesting characters and creating character moments. And I think that's kind of the difference why some of the lesser, like the lesser road movies are not as good, is because they don't have interesting characters. And the characters don't have an interesting kind of struggle. I think one good movie that kind of takes the road movie and makes it very simple is Chef, where it's like, it's an interesting character. Jon Favreau's character is a very interesting character that you want to follow. But then, I mean, I don't want to... He's also in Chef, but in Due Date, Robert Downey Jr., I don't know anything about that movie. I think it's just like, oh, he has to get from... I think it's his wife's pregnant, and he has to get to where she's at, and I don't know who Zach Galifianakis' character is.
He's just an annoying guy. It's plain
Strange
on automobiles.
That's what it is. It's
literally the exact same movie. Not as good.
But planes trains, I guess maybe just Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is that they put in there at the end of the day, those are interesting characters. Like they kind of, each of them has, and maybe Due Date has this as well, but like I guess the impact of when you find out more about like John Candy's character in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is just stronger. Because of the way they handle it before that.
It's a great reveal, and like there's a lot of heart in that movie, you know, considering how goofy a lot of it is.
Very much so. Because we kind of started a little bit later in the genre. Let's deconstruct it a little bit. And where do you think this all kind of comes from? This road movie, because I kind of think it's a big thing of why road movies got big, was they kind of took influence from like literature and kind of books or stories or whatever. And I think that was a very easy way to tackle film early on, is by adapting these kind of books.
No, yeah, I think we talked about it earlier. Like, I think the phrase American mythology, like the road movie is very heavily ingrained in American mythology, but like the idea of like the journey is ingrained in literally the earliest storytelling there is, like Greek mythology, the Bible. People are always, and like I said, it's a very easy way to get your point across, because there's a physical manifestation of your goal in front of you and you are physically moving towards it. It is a very literal way to tell stories. But I know we had talked before about the Odyssey, and you know, which is a very early road book, just about a man trying to get home and hoping that his wife hasn't married somebody else in the meantime, while all the gods are trying to stop him from getting home.
He has obstacles thrown his way. But even like with Wizard of Oz, which I consider one of the earliest road movies, is that it's, and you can't, we're talking about like what they find, what the wants and needs, where it's like, so Judy Garland's character Dorothy is she gets tossed, or she gets thrown into Oz because she wants to be away from home, like she wants to be somewhere that accepts her and all that, and so she's trying to get home the entire time in Wizard of Oz, and so she's, and finding the emperor, or the wizard, is what will help her get home. When in reality, she finds out at the very end, she had the choice to go home all along. It wasn't someone that gave that to her.
And it was about learning to appreciate the people who were at home. and their qualities.
Yeah, exactly. And a number of movies, I think, after that have kind of followed that Wizard of Oz kind of template. I know I haven't seen Wild at Heart by David Lynch, but people say it's kind of a reimagining of Wizard of Oz. With we were talking about the Odyssey, I know Oh Brother, Where Art Thou is basically a reimagining of the Odyssey. The Coens talked about how that was a big influence on them for that film. But you kind of see these early literary works as a way that influenced some of these early and later road movies, from like Grapes of Wrath. There's been numerous Huckleberry Finn adaptations. I think even coming out soon, Peanut Butter Falcon is a road with Shia LaBeouf. It's like everyone's kind of comparing it to like Mark Twain works because it's a road movie.
Yeah. It's a raft like movie, actually, but you know.
It's a raft. Yeah,
it's a river movie.
That's the thing. I mean, I feel like with a road movie, you can have like not just cars, but also motorcycles, planes, whatever. Yeah. It could be kind of anything.
Horses.
It's a metaphorical road.
We'll get back to one of our last clips, but I kind of want to ask, why do you think? Because there was kind of a rise in the 50s and 60s of kind of either some road movies, not as much as the 70s, but kind of these on the run quest type films. How much do you think the car has affected this type of movie? Because we're talking about American culture, and a big thing is car culture as well.
I think part of why you're seeing so many road movies in the 70s, and like you were saying with Two-Lane Blacktop, that it kind of captured the Route 66 right before it died, is I think in the 70s you're seeing a lot of romanticism for the 50s. You know, the rise of cars in the 50s and the freedom that it gave people. And I think a lot of those movies, you go back and look, that we talked about in the 70s, even if there's either set, you know, Bonnie and Clyde, Badlands is kind of set back in time, or they kind of evoke that, or Paper Moon is the same. It's kind of that romanticism. And I think what you're seeing in the 70s is the death of things like Route 66 and people romanticizing back when you used to just be able to hop in a car and go wherever and leave everything behind. I think that's why you see in the 50s, that's why you see some start popping up when that idea of these highways and you know, just taking off and driving across country. You see some of those movies then in the 50s, but then it's bigger in the 70s because you're starting to get kind of people like kind of nostalgic for it.
Ben, do you have any thoughts?
I think most of the like more recent, like I'm looking through the list here, but like the 2000s onward, you kind of have even more of an emphasis on like the family comedy variant. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, I think there's less of a, excuse me, there's less of that sort of like American freedom open road thing, and much more of like, this is a thing we all have to do because it's an American tradition. And so it's almost sort of riffing on like, an idea that it's like, oh God, you know, everybody does this, so here we go again. You know, I'm thinking of like We're the Millers. I haven't seen The Guilt Trip, but I think that's sort of in that vein, or like RV, or, you know, these films that are built around like, it's almost like a second pass over that idea of open road.
Yeah.
But now they're kind of like, deconstructing it a little bit and finding, you know, they're trying to find their own purpose in the fact that it's not what
even
it used to be.
I will admit to having seen this movie in theaters, even Wild Hogs is like kind of breaking down that, I mean, it's definitely riffing on, you know, something like Easy Rider and how Easy Rider has left this kind of trope of like, you know, lost American men going out on the road to find their masculinity, and Wild Hogs kind of plays on that.
Yeah, I think that those are both good points, Ben. I like when looking at it now, again, this is what I think Letterboxd, these lists, when putting it in chronological order, kind of seeing what's happening within the genre, is that now it's becoming kind of this, besides a few exceptions, kind of a family film in some way, or these kind of, I guess, like makeshift families where you kind of have college road trip with like, which is a Disney movie with Raven and Martin Lawrence, but then you kind of get these like Zombieland where it's these not real families, but they become families in the process. Or
there's a bunch of that.
With Chef, it's the same way, where it's about his he kind of discovers his relationship with his son, or with like I said, We're the Millers is one, even the remake of Vacation with Ed Helms, where it's like, it's kind of this, the growing of a family or the creation of a family in some ways.
Oh, wait, can we pause real quick? Because I was going through the Letterboxd list earlier. Ben, have you never seen National Lampoon's Family Vacation? Like the OG?
The OG. I have seen, this is one of those that I've seen on TV, like in bits and pieces. I don't know that I can really claim that I've ever sat and watched like the whole thing.
Okay, I respect that. I think there's probably a lot of people out there who are that way. Probably with Christmas Vacation too. I don't think you rarely like sit down and watch Christmas Vacation like all the way through. It's just on TV around Christmas, you know?
So that's interesting, because I want to keep all this in, but that's an interesting point of saying like you just jumped in like at one point and kind of saw clips of it. I don't know if this is with every movie, but with some of these movies, it feels like these road trip movies, you can kind of just hop in wherever.
Yeah, like you, really yeah. Lose I mean, you were saying much. Earlier that that the characters are really important to these types of films, and you do it. A lot of them do present in like vignettes almost. I know Pee Wee's Big Adventure is that way. I mean, if you ask anybody about that movie, it's like Large Marge is going to be what sticks out to them.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the plot line of the entire movie. It's these little pieces of things along the way. I think Dumb and Dumber is probably the same way.
Yeah, and another one we were talking about too before you got on, Thomas, was Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. Mm. Ben and I were saying, I was like, I probably seen that movie maybe once or twice all the way through, but so many times that was a movie that was like on cable when I was in high school or college, and you can just turn on, and no matter where you jump into, it kind of doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're aware of the Raul Duke character, you're aware of the Benicio del Toro's character, you're kind of just following them through like almost these weird like acid trips, like these, it's like they're like constantly on drugs, so it kind of doesn't matter where you hop in at, because it's just all these different vignettes and characters coming in and out. I think in some case, like Borat is another thing you could do too, with the, it's a mockumentary, but it's a road trip, and you could hop in whatever with that on that film.
Mm.
So that's just kind of a thing that I don't know if many other genres have that trope about them in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but real quick, I'm gonna go back and we're gonna show a quick clip from one of the earliest examples of the road movie. And even though it's not based on a literary adaptation, it is one that kind of inspired a lot of the future road movies in a way. And I really want to show it because we didn't show clips of the time on Screwball Comedy episode, but I want to show a clip from It Happened One Night. Thomas, can you give us a brief breakdown of It Happened One Night?
Yeah, so Claudette Colbert is on the run from, she's a socialite who is on the run to go get married to a guy that her father does not approve of, and she already married him, but she's been like, her father has like pulled her away from him, so she's going back to like be with him. Clark Gable is a reporter who finds her and recognizes her and tells her that she'll get him there safe, but he gets to like write the story about it, and kind of blackmails her into like, I'll call your father if you don't let me come along. And it's like we talked about Screwball Comedies, it's one of those opposite attract type movies, but it's definitely one of those movies that really explored early on the idea of driving cross country, and in this case they're on like trains and buses, but it was one of the first movies where you were just seeing all different types of America. They stop in South Carolina at one point, and you know, they of course fall in love along the way, but there's some very famous hitchhiking scenes. There's buses, there's trains, there's all kinds of traveling.
And so in this clip, you're going to hear the first meeting between Clark Gable and Clark Colbert when they're on the bus and they essentially start fighting over their seat.
Excuse me, lady, but that upon which you sit is mine.
I beg your pardon.
Now listen, I put up a stiff fight for that seat, so if it's just the same to you, scram.
Driver. Are these seats reserved?
Nah, first come, first served.
Thank you.
Hey, driver, these seats accommodate two people, don't they?
Well, maybe they do and maybe they don't.
Thank you.
Move over.
This is a maybe they do.
Snappy yeah. dialogue.
Comedy has changed, people. Comedy's changed.
For the better or worse, Ben.
Yeah. I was about to say, we went from that to vacation with Ed Helms. So, that's where your road comedies go.
I don't have much else to talk about. With this genre, or Ben, what were your thoughts on that clip? Have you seen it happen one night?
I haven't.
Okay.
No. Yeah.
Okay. Moving on. So we talked a little bit about this, the different types of stories within this genre. Another thing that kind of happens that you're meeting characters along the journey a lot of the times, like Wizard of Oz being a prime example, like The Straight Story, which is by David Lynch.
Brandon, can I give one shout out real quick?
Sure.
A lot of these, we've been talking about how much these films are almost always like American movies, but one of the really great foreign films on here, Wild Strawberries, by Bergman, 1957.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that one night when I was in the UK, and I left the theater floating on a cloud. Yeah. It's a magical movie, because from memory, I can't do the summary that you guys do, but basically it's an old man, like kind of, he's on a road trip, but he's also sort of like going back through memories of his life. And I don't, you know, if you've seen Bergman, I think it's one of his best that I've seen. I haven't seen all of his work, but for me, it's really my favorite, because it's bright and happy, and like it's got a lot of weight to it, because it is a person reflecting on their life, but it doesn't have some of the same stodgy, you know, somewhat strange parts of like Persona or The Seventh Seal. Mm-hmm. It's much more almost like It's a Wonderful Life, like this is what your life was like. It's an interesting kind of alternative to some of these other films on the list, if that's of interest.
It's very, like, I guess, introspective, I guess, is the word to say. We talked about Wim Wenders earlier on, but his films are very similar, where it's these characters kind of looking back on their lives, some of his films that way. Because basically, the main character is like a doctor who, or with Wild Strawberries, is a doctor who is going back to his alma mater to like receive an honorary degree. And so on his way, it's kind of, you're kind of seeing these vignettes, these kind of memory. It's a memory movie, basically.
Very, very quickly, if we're gonna shout out foreign road movies, I just wanna say real quick that also we gotta throw it out to Y Tu Mamá También, Alfonso Cuarón's like 2001 movie, because that is also just a fantastic road movie. And there's so many. I think that's one, you know, Wild Strawberries kind of predates the real American road movie, but Y Tu Mamá También is like so heavily influenced by the American road movie, but from a Mexican perspective. It's just two young men on the road with an older woman, and it's kind of a coming of age road movie. And you know, two great Gael García Bernal and Diego Luna, you know, it kind of launched the career of two really great actors as well. But yeah, highly recommend it.
Since we're shouting out a few movies, I'm going to shout out one I wanted to talk about a little bit. Get on the Bus by Spike Lee. And I watched this recently to prep for this. I had never heard of this movie, by the way.
I just now, as you've said, that is the first time I think I've ever heard that title.
I haven't seen all of Spike Lee's stuff, but I've been aware of a lot of almost all of Spike Lee's movies. And this is one I'm like, I don't know this one. And so basically it's about these a group of black men who are taking a cross-country bus trip to attend the Million Man March in Washington, D.C. And the Million Man March was this... it was this march that was happened by Louis Farrakhan, who was a controversial figure, I think still is today, about kind of his comments about different groups within America or different groups in general. It was basically a gathering of black men in the country. And so across this bus trip, you get to see, it feels like 12 Angry Men, but on a bus, because you're getting all these characters from different point of views argue and discuss a number of different things. And all of them being black men, and I don't like delving into this because I don't really have a strong perspective on a number of this, because I'm not from this this background, but these are characters who are basically talking about blackness and being black in America, being a black male in America. And you kind of see all these different views of this. So you have like one's like a black Republican, one's a gay black man or a gay black couple, one's like a Hollywood actor, one is a mixed man who has a white mother and a black father. And so you start, they start kind of debating all these different issues of what people should be like in America, what black men should be like in America, while all leading to this journey or this to this event at the very end of it. That was one I found while researching this podcast, and I highly, highly enjoyed it. It might be one of Spike Lee's most underrated, if not his most underrated film. We kind of talked about some tropes. Any tropes we missed within this genre that we haven't said? Soundtrack is a big one. A lot of the, Easy Rider was kind of the first one that kind of really used a soundtrack that wasn't really connected in any way. It was just like, here are a bunch of songs. And I feel like that evokes like just a road trip. When you're driving from place to place, you put on music, and in some cases it reflects the time period of when the trip is happening.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if we're going to talk music mixed in with these films, I think we got to throw it out real quick. Very popular on our Facebook thread, Crossroads with Britney Spears, Zoe Saldana, kind of that marriage of a popular music artist and it makes sense. When you are a executive trying to think about what, you know, Britney Spears, huge star, what are you you're gonna put her in a movie? Like, what kind of movie do you put her in? She's an American star known for coming from like a small town in the South. You put her in a road movie. Mm-hmm. And I think that movie was, I think a lot, like I was saying this before the podcast, I think if you were to describe to many people our age what this genre was, you know, hey, this is a road movie, what's your favorite road movie, I think Crossroads is going to pop into a lot of people's minds.
When they think of what a road movie is,
I think it may have been many people's introductions to the genre.
It follows a lot of the tropes where there's music, there's a I think it's like Britney Spears is like going to meet her mother, maybe, I'm not entirely positive.
She's going to audition for,
is that what it is?
For like a record label.
And maybe she meets her mother. She goes to find her mother in the process. It was something like that. It's been a while. I have seen this movie. It's just been a bit. I think I've actually seen this movie multiple times, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know why. There's that. There's a couple other examples that we got from the Facebook thread that I posted. A lot of them we talked about, another one being Tommy Boy, Sideways, My Own Private Idaho, and then Tu Wong Fu, which is a movie I really enjoy, with Patrick Swayze, Wesley Snipes, and Jago Lozamo, and they're
drag performers.
It's
just kind of interesting because you've got that, and then you've also got Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, which is about two drag queens and a transsexual person kind of also making a road trip. That was kind of the Australian
version of that
version that predated it.
Yeah.
And great cast.
There are a bunch of there's Australian is another kind of we won't delve into right now, but there's Australian road movies with say Adventures of Priscilla, and then also Mad Max and all of that. There's even more that you could delve into, more just kind of how the road trip movie there reflects their culture in Australia. And this is kind of, I think, prevalent throughout all different cultures and countries around the world. I think that's it. I think that's it. We're talking about the genre. I think it's time to pitch Ben now. So Thomas, I think you won the last one, correct?
I did, right?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. What was the last one I pitched? I remember winning.
It was
Way Way Back?
No, you
was
lost.
It The Way Way Back?
You lost that
I lost,
one.
No, I won The Way Way Back.
No,
I
you, lost, you, no you lost The Way Way Back. Because I won for This Property is Condemned. You won for American Hero with Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. There we go. Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Jimmy Stewart. Okay. Here we go, Ben. Ben, I'm very glad that you wanted to bring up Wild Strawberries, because the film I'm about to pitch you has some you know, flakes of wild strawberries in it.
Flakes.
Has a little sprinkling of wild strawberries. And the movie that I am going to pitch you is Alexander Payne's 2013 film Nebraska. Very quick pitch, because it's a very simplistic movie, but you've got Bruce Dern as an aging man who receives a letter in the mail. It's one of those scam letters. I know when I was a kid, I used to get really excited about it, but it says like, you may have won $1 million if you like put this sticker here and mail this back and sign up for a magazine subscription. We'll send you your $1 million. And he is an older man and a little senile and takes it seriously and decides he's going from Montana to Nebraska to redeem this, which it's, he's supposed to mail it back, but he's going to redeem it by hand because he wants to get the $1 million by hand. So his son, played by Will Forte, who is in the middle of a breakup, decides to kind of humor his father and just take him just to get out of town and to spend a little time with his dad, even though he knows that it's all a scam and, you know, nothing's going to come of it. And in the meantime, they end up passing through the town that Bruce Dern grew up in and kind of meet, see his family for the first time in a really long time and see his old friends. And it's kind of about Will Forte discovering more about his father than he knew. It's that idea of this person becoming more than your father, it actually becoming a human being and being able to relate to him more. And so of course along the way they learn to see each other in a new light. And the clip that I have here is from when they've stopped off in Bruce Dern's hometown. And Will Forte's mother, Bruce Dern's wife, played by June Squibb, who was nominated for an Academy Award for this movie, as was Bruce Dern. She's come to like meet them in the hometown because they're going to have a little family reunion. And they are eating at a local buffet slash karaoke bar when they catch sight of Stacy Keach, who was Bruce Dern's former business partner.
Go slow, I fall behind.
What are you having, old man?
Meatloaf.
You've been staring at that menu for 10 minutes. Where does it say meatloaf?
Well, they ought to have meatloaf.
Well, they don't, so pick something else.
Are we ready to order?
Oh, I knew it.
Dad, do you know what you want?
Do you have meatloaf?
No, I'm sorry, we don't. That's only on the lunch buffet.
Chicken, then.
Do you want the fried chicken or the flame-broiled chicken breast?
Fried.
He'll have the flame-broiled.
And for you, ma'am?
I was thinking about having the roast beef, but now I'm not sure. What do you recommend? What's good here?
It's all good, but I'm kind of partial to the tilapia.
No, I want the roast beef.
I'll have the tilapia.
Don't forget to help yourselves to the soup and salad bar.
On a cold and gray Chicago morning, a poor little baby child is born in the ghetto.
That's Aunt Pegram singing.
And his mama cried. Cause if there's one thing that she don't need, it's another hungry mouth to feed in the ghetto. People, don't you understand?
He always did have a nice voice. It's the only nice thing about that bastard.
Oh, he's all right.
All right? Did you know that he was always trying to get in my bloomers?
Jesus, Mom, was the whole town trying to seduce you?
These boys grow up staring at the rear ends of cows and pigs. It's only natural that a real woman will get them chafing their pants.
Mom, please don't talk about that kind of stuff right before we eat.
I actually went back and rewatched this movie this morning to get ready for this episode. And I think what really stuck out to me the first time I saw this movie is how it captures just kind of the universality of small town America. Cause this is set across Montana and Nebraska, but the conversations these people had are my grandparents and my great aunts and uncles, like my family reunions, 100%. And it's a really quiet movie. Obviously not a lot happens. You know, from, you know, as soon as you start the movie, you know, there's no $1 million at the end of this trip.
Yeah.
But it just captures small town America and aging, you know, the older generation. It's just all done so well. And I highly recommend it. That is my pitch to you, Ben.
Thank you.
Okay. My turn.
I will now, hear the next pitch.
Oh, okay. You're like, no, I'm done. You're going to pick that one. Anyway. So Ben.
Brandon.
Do you like Robert De Niro?
Yeah.
Okay. Then Ben, do I have a movie for you?
Oh boy.
I'm going to pitch to you. the 1988 comedy classic that everyone should watch, and that's Midnight Run, starring Robert De Niro and Charles Grodin. Robert De Niro is this bounty hunter from out of Chicago who now lives in Los Angeles, and he is tracking down this accountant who has embezzled $15 million from this mob boss in Chicago. And the accountant is played by Charles Grodin, who is the father in Beethoven. If you've seen Clifford, he was in that with Martin Short. Just kind of this very dry film comedian. And so basically, De Niro plays the bounty hunter Jack Walsh, who's tracking him down, finds him, and basically he has to bring him from Chicago to Los Angeles. Actually, from New York City to Los Angeles within like a few days. And through the trip, Grodin doesn't want to go. He doesn't want to go to Los Angeles. He's afraid about what's going to happen. And so throughout the time, they go from like riding in planes to driving a car to riding on a bus. And just throughout the entire thing, they're being chased by like mob people, the FBI, other bounty hunters who want to collect the money that De Niro is going to get for bringing Charles Grodin to L.A. Joey Pantoliano, Joey Pants, is in the movie as well as De Niro's boss, who he's constantly in contact with, trying to get him there for the bond money. So in this clip I'm going to show you guys is that De Niro and Grodin are on the bus, and they just got off the plane because Grodin had a panic attack because he doesn't like flying in planes. And so now De Niro is on the bus with him, and you kind of start revealing more about De Niro's kind of character, his complex character.
Oh, no, come on. Cigarettes are killers.
So are women.
Not the right woman. My wife and I have a wonderful relationship. She stuck it out with me through all of this.
Yeah, stuck it out with you and all your millions. What a trooper.
I don't have millions, Jack. I gave it all to charity, remember?
You didn't keep just a little for yourself, John?
I kept enough to get away and stay hidden.
Yeah, right.
You know, when we change buses in Chicago, you're going to have a couple hours. I think you would be a better man if you used that time to look up your ex-wife and daughter. It's a perfect opportunity.
Well, why don't you mind your own business?
Let me ask you this. Why is it you haven't seen them in 9 years?
Why?
Yeah.
Just to get you off my back, I'll tell you why. She married a police lieutenant, and I'm not very popular with the Chicago Police Department, okay?
Why aren't you popular with Chicago Police Department?
That's a whole other... What, do we know each other? Why?
What did you do? Why aren't you popular with Chicago Police Department?
That's something that really doesn't concern you.
She hurt you, Jack?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
What are you sorry about?
I'm sorry you're hurt.
I'm not hurt.
You just said you were hurt.
I'm not hurt.
You just said you were hurt.
I didn't say I was hurt. You said I was hurt.
I asked you if you were hurt, and you said, yeah, I'm hurt.
That's because you made me say. You're starting to put words in my mouth.
Jack, you're a grown man. You have control over your own words.
You're goddamn right I do. So here come two words for you. Shut the fuck up.
De Niro's a guy who he's so great in dramatic roles, but when you get him with the right comedy, he is hysterical. And I think Midnight Run might be one of his best comedies he ever did. It was directed by Martin Brest, who also did Beverly Hills Cop, who can do comedy action film, because there's all a lot of action in this movie too, but a lot kind of comedy action buddy cop movies. I think it's one of the underrated films of the 80s. With two great performances, and it follows a lot of the road movie tropes. You get to kind of reveal these characters with each step along the way, from De Niro finding out about his kind of background with the Chicago Police Department, his wife seeing his daughter again. It's just you without these interesting characters, it would not be as good of a movie as it is. And because De Niro is so good in this role, it's a wonderful watch.
Gentlemen, a conundrum as always. So, you know, the best part about these lists is that I genuinely, not only are there obviously films I haven't seen, but when I go through these lists before the show, there's films I've never heard of. And Midnight Run was one of those. Like, I don't think I've ever seen this, like a trailer or, you know, whatever. So I, as we were scrolling through before the show, I was like, oh, that's an interesting movie. Nebraska, this is a film. I love your pitch, Thomas, about basically capturing like the realities of Americana. Like I don't think I ever watched a trailer for it. I know just that it's black and white. You know, I know a lot of the details about it. Well, maybe not a lot, but, yeah. Okay. I've made my decision. Nebraska, I want to see that movie. It's been on my watch list. It feels like my vegetables that I'm never going to get around to. Midnight Run, I'm a sucker for a comedy. This is my burger and fries. I'm gonna go with Midnight Run.
Ben, did you not just laugh during that Nebraska clip I just showed you? Oh, man. It's Alexander Payne, man. It's a comedy.
I'm sorry to hear your
thought I had
regret.
That one clinched. Should not have gone first.
I gave you the choice. You had the choice.
Gone first. Oh, man.
I will say this because I love both these films, Nebraska and Midnight Run. And the one thing that I wanted to say, when Stacey Keach is singing karaoke, I did have like a massive flashback to growing up because, weirdly enough, like my dad's best friend like does karaoke. I don't mean like sings karaoke. I mean like runs karaoke.
Yeah.
And growing up at bars and hearing just like drunk people singing bad renditions of like Elvis songs and like country music songs was like, I really felt that just now.
Some friends of mine in college, we like went and rented a house on one of the like smaller beaches in South Carolina. And it's not as touristy. And we went out one night on like a Wednesday night to this karaoke bar. And we were like, yeah, it's going to be fun. Like college karaoke, small town people take karaoke very seriously.
Jesus, man, there was a couple people where they sing the same song every night, and that's their song. And by God, if you're new and you come in and sing that song, something might happen to you in the parking lot.
That's the beauty of Nebraska. It is like someone studied everyone's experiences in small town America and turned it into a movie. It is incredible, Ben. I would recommend it. I think because it is black and white, for some reason it feels like vegetables, but it is it's not heavy at all when you watch it. It is a very just light road film, and and it's something, you know, I watched it today. It's not, I don't ever want to encourage people to like half watch a movie, but like you don't have to be, you know, fully engaged with it because it's I don't know.
Well, I love Will Forte, definitely check it out. That's definitely a big,
but Midnight Run once, so let's move on. Let's have
I still want Ben to watch the movie. Oh, it's not about the points, Brandon.
Right,
it is about giving Ben a better film watching experience.
I agree with you. We've come so far from our first podcast. So any other comments you guys want to say about road movies? I feel like we could go on and on about road movies, like an endless road.
Save that till the end, Brandon.
We've reached the destination. We've reached the end of our podcast episode, and we found that
the
journey
wanted to go.
Where it becomes less interesting.
We found that the journey was more important than the destination, which was me losing. But the journey, you know, that's not very interesting. The journey was more important. It doesn't matter who won or lost at the end of this episode.
That's true. It's all
that's right. You took the right lesson.
It's all that we became closer in this process, and we found out how much we need one another. Anyway, make sure you like this letterbox list. It's called On the Road. It's currently on my letterbox that you can find. We have merch, like we said earlier in the show. It's on Facebook, Instagram. It's on tpublic.com. Make sure you follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Contact us about the show. We like hearing what you guys have to say. Ben, Thomas, as always, thank you so much.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Brandon.
We hope you guys listen to more episodes soon. Bye.